what directions the state is going to go in more advanced directions, and I could talk to a bunch of people who just want basics, not conceptually how stuff works. How many people here know about jailing, run jails? Okay, how many people here done stuff with machine virtualization? All right, good bunch of people. All right, cool. So this is going to be like a good audience here, a techy audience. With all that, let's start, just dive into this. Here's a quick thing on IT context. I'm who I am, so you know what this lecture, who's come from, how I'm talking about this. So I use jailed-accessible web application servers and for development purposes, making web apps. The methodology of presenting is attempting to be stock. Like stock free BSD methodology, stock PHK methodology, which is pretty old school Unix. And I'm not, you know, one of the jail authors, and I'm not, I don't have commitment or any of that jazz. I am just somebody who uses the heck out of these things. I love them. Okay, warranty or announcement, yeah, I'm not going to be really out of the bar later. I was planning to be. I have to go back to the data center after this is done. So, let's see, that was old. I'm going from an old lecture to, because I couldn't find the one that I just set up for that. So this is a little funny. Okay, so, a quick exercise. This is just like a mental exercise, and I'll blow through it fast because everybody here is technical. Scale, patterns, and complexity. All right, so has anybody ever seen the film Power of the Ten? Charles Reynes. Okay, so one person. So in this film, they start with this guy sleeping in a park on Lakeshore Drive in Chicago, and they zoom all the way out into the cosmos in these Powers of Ten scales. It's really cool. It's really beautiful. Watch this if you get a chance. Public library have it. It's, you know, they zoom out into the cosmos and go way bigger than just our solar system, and then they zoom all the way back in. Whoa. Is there any way I can turn this down? I'm getting some... They zoom all the way back in to this guy's hand and into his cells and past DNA and all this, you know, micro-scale stuff, and there's really fun patterns that emerge, you know, like between this guy and that guy, and it's really neat stuff that happens when you start thinking about things of massive scale shifts. So this is like my little version of the universe. This is the Ike universe. And so here we are way out far. We've got, you know, satellites and all of this kind of global communication stuff and the internet. This is a map from the Opti project. And we start coming in and scaling in, and now we're in New York City and scaling in, you know, to downtown, and here's a nice bug, and here's a data center, I think it's MII, and then, you know, we're inside the data center, and everybody in here, a lot of people know what data centers look like, right? Go ahead. Yeah, nods. Oh, yeah. Data center, cabinets. Inside of cabinets, you have, you know, computers and gear, and at this scale, you'll find me sleeping at conferences, usually. So that's pictures. George took that. We have a server, we have hard drive, you know, we all know about what's inside a computer, hard drives, motherboards, network stuff. Now I get to a software layer, here we are at the outside, you know, a web server, SSH and Apache, cool.
Can you get
inside. You get inside, you get to the Unix core of the system where your applications are actually running, Apache and SSH. And in this case, I've got, you know, a Zope or something behind those things. And this guy, I just found at that scale, and he runs NetBSD. All that stuff just to run a website. This is a website which is down, by the way. I'll ask you all what you want out of it at the end of the lecture. But all of that just to display this web page. Pretty complicated, right? Kind of fun. Complicated. And then now, I'm going to scale through this. You know, we all know that CPUs are getting faster, hard drives are getting smaller and cheaper. These are embedded web servers, which I thought was really cool. I found online somewhere. That one's at least got a nick, which is pleasant. You know, so you take all this complexity, and what are we here about? We're here about Unix. This is an Ike picture of Unix, all right? And this is kind of like user land, user space, Unix system. Try to think of ways to visualize this. This is about as close as it gets. But, you know, you got kernel here, bootloaders, and then you kind of scale out through all your directories, user, here's, where is it, bin and sbin, and then user sbin, user bin. Everybody kind of get the logic in this diagram so that we can proceed? Nods. Okay. Good. See, our world's complex. Unix is complex. So what happens when we start scaling, we start thinking about scale and Unix together, is we get stuff like this Manaboy fractal movie, which I thought was pretty cool. Just watch this for a second. Trip out. All right. Wow, I mean, you keep scaling and, you know, you keep getting these similar patterns as you scale back and forth. Pretty nifty.
Hi, can we watch this later at the bar?
Yeah. Sure. So, if we take this, we can take, what if we take little singularities like Unix and we start doing weird things with scale with Unix, making little virtual Unixes inside of other Unixes. Why not? The pattern exists elsewhere. Now, kind of push in here, you know, if anybody wants to talk like real hardcore semantics on how this all works. How a Manaboy fractal actually relates to jailing. Let's drop it. But what I'm trying to get at is that this stuff isn't, it's not outside of the realm of sanity to be able to think that you can take and virtualize machines. And these kinds of ideas and reasons for wanting to virtualize machines have been, are very, 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 very old. There's a lot of reasons to virtualize machines, including why, again, we're all here. The Unix time-sharing system, what Unix was all about when it was first created. So you get the idea. And so why do we want to virtualize the entire operating system? Why would we want to make virtual OS's run? A couple reasons. Security threats, development messes are really good ones. Mutually untrusted users. Okay? Now, you know, you can think of mutually untrusted users as these guys. You know, this is a bunch of hackers sitting at DEFCON capture the flag. Bunch of hackers, yeah. They're definitely mutually untrusted users. These people are mutually untrusted users that are way more practical to things that I see and a lot of us see. This guy, for example, is not going to be trusted in her kitchen, period. All right? She's not going to be trusted with his motorcycle. It's the way it works. You know, so these people, all in this case, are all waiting on some common infrastructure, the train. They're all sitting waiting for the train because they all have to share it. Because it's not economically or otherwise feasible that everyone have their own train. You got more mutually untrusted users. I used to host their website. They were not cool. Another thing with mutually untrusted users, you've got, you know, login, admin, password, love. And people who run a super user all the time, they're about as safe as this guy standing barefoot on a metal ladder in a pool with a drill, right? Then it's dangerous. People do dangerous things. And people just are wacky. They do all kinds of funny things on Unix systems, on your computers. And then programs, they're users too. You know, there's great little bug, but programs crash. Stuff dies, you know, the world we live in. And then there's people who do things totally differently than you would do them, in ways that you would find appalling. In this particular region of India, rats are like a really cool, like, hey, the rats are here. Let's feed the rats. You know, like people here feed neighborhood cats. You know, so you have cultural clashes on shared systems. And then you have professionals. Professionals, so the Unix sysadmins who do this stuff all day long are the most vulnerable to massive mistakes because they're doing the heaviest lifting. All right? So, you know,
there's a lot of different reasons for mutually entrusted users. And when you're all on the same system, you can have some pretty serious problems that affect everybody. Somebody takes down a box with a lot of people on it, everybody is in trouble. All right? So what's the answer? Harmony, peacefulness, happiness. Anxiety. You know, all of us, how many people in here do security detail for part of their job or for fun? Yeah, a lot of knots, a lot of people. Right, it's not fun working in a system that's so locked down you can't breathe. It just isn't. It's not, you can't get much done. It takes forever to get really simple things accomplished. All right, so here's one other reason that jailing is a cool idea. Virtualizing machines is a cool idea. Because what if you're maintaining this rack full of junk, right? Here's a great example. This is at somebody's office, this equipment's 10 years old, big old 1 gigabyte SCSI hard drives sitting in there, and this whole rack full of stuff has just 3 web servers serving an office internet, a local use DNS cache, a file server that 2 people use, and 2 dev servers for those same 2 people. All right, and it's a whole rack full of gear, a lot of electricity, old breaking stuff. Hey man, just get a 1U high density box and stuff a bunch of jails in there. Virtualize all that stuff, and you've still got your 3 web servers, your DNS cache, your file server, your dev servers. And how do we do it? We do it with jail. All right. And 3BSD, we have jail. What is a jail? I'm going to rip through this stuff real fast, because now I've gone through that. I'm going to rip through it. If anybody has any kind of quick questions, shout it out if you think it's important. I may skip, I may be like, hold off, but fine. What is a jail? User space utility. It's just like ifconfig or any other user space utility. It produces a virtual system image, and it's process tree based. What is jail 2? It's the system call that makes the jails. It imprisons a process. It calls chmoot and attaches it to an IP. All right, so jail is... It was originally and is still built on top of standard other Unix utilities, chmoot and utcpwstack. And it's a very few lines of code. It's in the hundreds of lines of code, the stuff that actually runs jail. The stuff that's really hard about jailing is that a lot of the rest of the system needs to be audited to ensure that when a process is jailed, it doesn't have serious problems, which has been ongoing and is ongoing. What a jail is not, it's not a classical machine emulator like VMware, like Xen. It is not chroot, which in the OpenBSD community calls for all the OpenBSD people in here who chroot things and call it jail. Boy, it is really poisoning the Google pot.
They use it as a verb, though.
Yeah, it's frustrating. So if you're an OpenBSD and you do that, don't blame me, but say something to somebody. Some uses for jailing. So when an entire, here's some good uses. When an entire OS is needed for a small, complicated service, a specific type of very particular web application, for example. Security, to securely separate untrusted users and processes. Hey, you want to give a bunch of people, you know, space on a Unix machine? Great. Separate them, unless they're doing things together. Learning and development servers. These are great in educational environments. Really, really cool. Want to teach a bunch of people how to write a bunch of Pro code or Python or PHP apps. Give each student a jail. Give them a virtual computer. It's very cheap. And it's easy. If you set these things up right, you know, if a student or somebody mutes their jail, it's not a big deal. You recreate the thing. Neato. Hardware resource sharing. And there's really insane high availability possibilities with jailing. How many people want me to go that direction with the rest of the talk, the high availability stuff? Okay, about half, so I'll do it. 4 uses for jail. Kernel access, you don't need a kernel. This is not, that's the difference between jailing and Xen or VMware or any other virtual machine. You don't get access to the kernel, and the kernel is actually a software that's dev null. You can put it in there, just for show. You have limited network interface access. You have limited device driver access. And, you know, another 4 years for jails would see if Rudolph could do the job really well. Like, what are you buying with the siege route option? Do you really need to build a whole jail when you can, you know, when the mechanism for running bind DNS lets you very, very quickly and effectively siege route it?
Not really, no.
Because you have to build a whole OS for jail. Some applications require particular low-level system calls, notably Postgres. Okay, how many Postgres people are in the room who use it? Any developers in the room, Postgres developers? Oh, okay. If you are here, you're probably not raising your hand because you know I'm going to come find you after the lecture. So some applications that make use of untrusted system calls, old stuff, and in Postgres' case, System 5 IPC calls, totally ancient, totally unnecessary, living in the late 70s. So with that stated, things like the System 5 IPC calls, they have been audited, but in the context in which they're used, they're absolutely unsafe and create holes that would allow users and processes to break out of their jail's container. So they're just not allowed. How to jail? Well, the instructions are in the jail man pages, which, and anybody really does this, they've seen my lecture and they go do it, they come up to me afterwards and they go, hey, you're a chump, you just read the man page.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. But it's fun to hear somebody say something, too. It makes it better. I'm a man page with personality. What do? You build a free BSD user land from source somewhere on the host machine. It's not in the group. You put it somewhere else in your system. Commonly, user local jails is a great idea. You create an IP alias interface using IFTP, and you run the jail call with the IP in the user land, and the jail boots. It starts at RC, where RC starts during the boot process. We will make a practical comparison here. So basically what I was just saying is, if you're a real machine, you're a jailed machine, pretty much identical, except your kernel is a linked dead null. And instead of being on a piece of hardware, the user land lives in some directory, somewhere, on your machine. Okay, demo time. I wanted to bring that thing to Canada before when I was lecturing, but George wouldn't let me put it in his car. Okay, so that's FreeBSD 5.3 machine. This is a 4.10 machine. I'm going to make a few comparisons because FreeBSD 4 jailing and FreeBSD 5 and now 6 jailing have some substantial differences. FreeBSD 5 and 6 production ready, like really hard hitting heavy use. I'm starting to put my toe in the water personally, and going okay. FreeBSD 4, rocking hardcore since 98. I mean, it's really solid, really well done. So I'm still going to include it here. Preflight, okay, simple. You want to get your source to build with. CBF is great. Make somewhere for the jails to live. Partition this route wherever you want the jails to live. Make somewhere for the jail-related start management scripts to live. RC is a bad, bad idea, even though it's part of the base of FreeBSD. How many people have started jails with RC in here? And had them barf. It's a bad idea, I'll get to that. Preflight. Here's one straight from man pages. This is the definitive definitive first steps. Yeah. You scroll down past all that. You see this stuff? This is what you do to build the jails. Just like doing the build world or make world. But you're not building a kernel, and you're putting the source somewhere else in your system, not in your room. That's pretty much it. Let me see if there's anything else here. Nope. Okay, then you go to build from source. Is this building? Is it going?
Yeah.
Am I going to do it all? Oh, boy. I don't want to do this all. Does anybody want to see this happen, actually?
Yes.
Couple hands. Okay. So here we are. We're making a directory, user local jails. We're making directory, user local jail bin. That's where I'm going to put stuff, start scripts. That's basically it, the scripts that will be used to start the jail. Because it's kind of verbose. It's a little silly to type out of the code. And a little unsafe. So let's make this directory. We'll call it Chickadee. That was the name of this jail. And I'm naming it in the old school convention where I'm putting the IP address in the directory name. It's kind of old school over the interface with jails. Not necessary, though. Call it whatever you want. Just a directory. Okay. So here's that directory. And now, going into user source. I already did this, so yeah. Don't need to do that. Okay, make world with the destination directory of what we just defined before. So this is going to go through make world. How many people want me to sit and let it go?
Nobody.
Awesome. You guys are smart. That goes on for a while, and you should go watch that Eames video while you make. Alright, so you just made directory container and you're going to put stuff in. Alright, so now we get to like a common question. Why is there an automated build system for this thing? Why can't I just say put jail here? The computer does it. Well, there's a couple reasons. One, you can put jails anywhere, right? And there's reasons to put them on their own slice. There's reasons why you want to put them in a directory with a bunch of other jails. There's not really been any... The application for jailing is too broad. This is the opinion of PHK, and I back it up. What are the options of jail? The application for jailing is really too broad to standardize some specific way that you make jails. And the types of computers that people run them on are way too vast. So you really want to do it from scratch, just like the instructions say. And you want to, once you have the basic setup for what you're doing on a jailing machine, it's better to then automate it for what you're doing with some really simple shell scripts, which we're going towards. And then you have your jail setup. Let me see, and here's another reason why. You're going to want to put the network configurations for the jails, like DNS servers, things like that. Users, packages, set the time zone, little things like that that just aren't relevant, aren't really sane to write a whole new system installed specific to jailing. Yeah. You can't hear, I stopped, okay. Okay, so pre-flight, we're going to make distribution. That make world completed. Make distribution, and it's following the man page still, pretty verbosely. And when do I hit return? Right now? Say what? Thank George for the coffee, actually. Well, I think that's, I think I didn't really even do it. But let's just look at what we just did. We created a directory. We did a make world, and we filled it full of userland stuff for our Unix machine, our virtual machine. Now we want to mount our devices for the jail. And here's one thing. On a previous E5 or 6 machine, mount the devices, which is really cool now. And you can throw macros at the mount command so that you can only mount certain types of devices. It's really cool. The Mount DevFS man page has an unbelievable array of options, so you can tweak it out. This is really cool because you may not want jailed users to see that you have, 4 actual physical Ethernet interfaces. You might want them to only see the one that they get to use. You may not want them to see all the disk space. You may not want them to type df and see all of the other DevFSs that are mounted for all the other jails, so they know exactly how many jails and where they are on the system. Little things like that. With your devices, you can put it down with macros. On previous 4, and I can't remember which slide it was, on 3BSD 4, there is no, you don't mount them devices, you build them, right? Pain in the rear, it's a frustration with 4, because if you want to restrict these things for a jail on 3BSD 4, you actually have to go delete the devices. And then if you want that device back again, you have to go make the devices again. And when you copy a jail from one piece of hardware, it say has NICs that use the EM driver, and you copy it to another piece of hardware that uses the FXP driver, suddenly your devices start doing all these weird things. You have to build your devices again. Little bit annoying. Not the worst thing in the world, but it's a real nice thing with 5. You can just throw macros in and out randomly. So what do we just do? We've got our base. We just mounted all of our devices. All right, so we got, you can see there's a couple of like Ethernet devices, some disk devices, memory, just dev null. Yeah, question. What does throw macros at the mount command mean? When you use mount devfs to mount your devices, your device nodes, there's a specification for the actual mount program that lets you define which devices get mounted, which ones get hidden, and actual really device-specific tunables for like even what your device is about. And even can everybody hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm back there. Okay. Hope that answers your question. Okay. Let me see. Okay, so pre-blank. So we're going to do is make a null kernel. And this is just decoration. We're going to make a soft link to dev null for the jail and call it kernel. Why are we going to do this? Well, if the box is getting rooted and somebody logs in, goes to the root directory and doesn't see their kernel, they're going to think something's really weird. Well, who knows what they're doing. Let's make one. Here's something that's really important, and I hope this pauses. No, darn it, it doesn't. This is really important. You gotta be watch out when you're on a host machine that you don't give incorrect paths for jailed stuff. Like right there, I just made a soft link to, I gotta go back to that because it's really important and a lot of people miss it. If you give a soft link to say /dev/null, what's that a soft link to? We're on the host computer. That's dev null on the host computer. If that's sitting in the jail, and the jail becomes jailed, and it can't see outside of itself, it can't see the host computer, it doesn't see dev null there. So that soft link is now bad. You really want to walk on eggshells and be very, very verbose about what you're doing when you're in the jail. Right? It was just there. Did everybody catch that? Does everybody understand what I'm saying? Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, sure. Thanks. So right here you can see kernel is a soft link to dev null locally in that jail directory. Okay, master system. Here's some more pre-flight tidbits, and they're in the man page again. In the master system, you don't want things listening on an IP interface that are going to interfere with services you're going to run from the jail, because it start having weird conflicts. Like running web server on the, running Apache on the main jail, you're running. Let's use something more realistic. You're running SSH on the host system. You're running SSH in the jail. If the SSH on the host system is answering for all the IP interfaces on the box, it might try answering to the one on the jail. Like, you run into weird problems. You really want to lock everything down. So these are the real basic things to do to lock down everything on the host box. And on 3BSD 5 and 6, there's, if you need some kind of a local host only MTA, there's etc/faults.rc.com, there's a line that you can give that's send not submit only, which is real handy for this kind of setup. So we want to break that stuff down, and then for the master address, here it is, in SSHD, we want to make sure that we're only listening on the IP address that's for the host box with SSH. And we want to do this with all apps that we run from the host box. Right? Really bind them to the IP address. Inside the jail, doesn't really matter that much at all, actually. The host box matters a lot. Okay, and so here's the diagram, you know, these SSH daemons both running that could fight with each other. Okay, so now we're going to configure the jail, and we're going to call SH. We're just going to call a shell inside of a jail. And here's the basic jail command. Jail, path to jail, host name, IP address, and what we're going to do with that jail's command, that jail process. And so we're just starting a shell. We need to start the system. So now we're editing rc.conf in the jail and doing some real simple stuff, making sure that just so it doesn't get loud when it boots. It'll boot even if you don't do all this stuff. Yeah. Yeah, you can specify, I'm sorry, yeah, you can specify a path for your shell, but when you make this jail command, it's calling the path starting at your jailing directory. So it's not going to call from the host system, it's calling inside the jail. Inside the jail, just like chroot. How many people are familiar with chroot in here? Basics. Okay, cool. Yeah, so chroot won't let you see above the directory that you're calling this command. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. You can repeat the question. What's the question? Oh, okay. So environment variables for the shell. If you could keep the old ones from the shell you just had, correct? And if those translated into the jail, the answer is no. No. What you're calling in jail is stock to that jail. So the environment variables for the root shell on that jail are set in a particular manner that you want them to be set by. That's how we behave. Okay, what are we doing? Oh, we're using sysinstall. Does anybody want me to back up on this? There's everybody watching diligently. We're basically just doing a bunch of little things that are in the man page, like, yeah, adding user accounts. And in this case, I used sysinstall on kind of wonky small screens that look nice up here. But, wow, how many people know what this looks like? Setting some clock time, installing the machine. So we're going through and doing all these little teeny things that you need to do for your computer, just have your computer. Yes?
Would it be possible, if you had multiple jails, to use a single hierarchy as a base for all the jails, and then have each jail
Yes, I will get to that. It's a question regarding using union file system to replicate your actual one single file system and then have the jails modify the file system on a local basis. I'm going to get to that in just a little bit. Just let it rock for a sec. So we're going through and setting, set startup options. Now we're back at this shell. We're exiting the shell. The little teeny tidbits that you want to do here, they're in the man page, so they're not that exciting, so I'm going to move forward. But so just to show what we've done, we just configured, we had our base system, we had our devices mounted, and then we went in and configured a whole bunch of stuff. So suddenly we have home and users, and we have root user, root password, Etsy password, we have Etsy RCB, we've installed some stuff from ports, user local, we installed things like that. The whole planet uses Bash, right?
No.
Sorry. No fights. It lets you use whatever shell you want, Mark, in your own jail. Okay, so we're almost there. Here we are. IFconfig.
What did I just do? What did the movie do?
Is that it? Yeah. What's going on here, Sophie? Okay, so we're throwing in an IP alias using ifconfig, the standard IP utility on the machine, to give the machine an alias IP address. Right? So we have these two IP addresses you can see here, .100 and .200. One of them is the host system, one of them is the jailed system. Pretty simple stuff. I mean, this is all using stock system utilities so far, right? And another one, we're mounting the process file system in the jail as well. So we need to get Rocket Test for the jail. Park events when you mount it in the jail is neat because you only see all processes running in the jail. I think that's it for that one. So what else? What have we done now? We were here, and now we have added. We added an IP interface, which actually I think should be 200 right here. We added an IP interface, and we. Oh yeah, and the process files. Okay, so start script. Here's what a start script looks like. You set the network device. Now you can do this over and over and over and issue this command until your fingers hurt. And it won't change anything on the machine if the IP already exists on that interface. So you can just always rely on the fact that that's always there. I mean, that's always fine. You can run out the end of there. You mount the process file system. You mount DevFS. Now when your jail's killed and you're going to rerun this script, you want to unmount both of these things, or else you start getting these stacks of the same mount at the same place, which can cause weird problems. I won't get into that. Just unmount them whenever you restart the jail. But this is the Unix. Whenever we start anything. So you start the jail using the jail command, the userland path to the jail, host name for the jail. This could be a fully qualified domain name if you want it to be. And the IP address you're going to bind it to, and you use sh call rc scripts, your start scripts, and voila, we're about to do this. So let's start this thing. Is this the moment where we actually start things?
You're starting that from the parent directory of the jail's directory, right?
You can start it. Hold on one sec. I don't understand your shouting question. Really?
No, we told about starting up the jail.
Right. Okay. So we're calling SCRCP. And here we are, and now this looks like the first time you booted a FreeBSD 5.3 box, or 6 box. Now we type all this gobbledygook to generate our entropy for our keys. If anybody's writing this down right now, I can give it to you later that this was made with. Lamo, so that's pretty unexciting now. Now we're just back to a shell. But the jail has been started. So let's SSH into the jail. Because there's really no way, the best way to get into a jail is using SSH and really treat it like it is a real computer. All the rest of these other tricks to get in and jump processes and all these things, they're bound to cause you all kinds of problems. Use SSH. What is it? Oh yeah, this is really silly. I kept forgetting the password that I gave the jail on the finish. I think it shows up on screen in just a second. It's root on all my boxes, if anybody wants to. Yay! We're logged into the jail. Here's the start page. And everybody should be leaping for joy. Like, you should be jumping out of your chairs and hugging each other right now. Alright. So we started the jail and we have this running abstract jail bound to an IP interface. Let's see. I think I did that again. Let's see. That was a start. No, we already did that. Okay, so this is it. This is what we should all be feeling like right now. We're see through. Okay. Now, breaking out of jail. Things are going to get fun. We're going to get into some best practices, and then we'll talk about breaking things. So, here's this passive comparison of the jail, and does everybody understand how we've gotten here now? Pretty, more or less. All right, if you don't hound me on list or read the man pages, right now. Hound me on list. Best practices, SSH in to manage jail's processes. Killing processes from the host system is totally possible, right? Find that process and kill it. Doing so can be really, really, really complicated, and not complicated because you're actually going to break something or there's possibility of it being buggy. We have a lot of jails running on a jailing host. We have a lot of processes. It's really complicated to manage all of those from the host system, right? So log into jails to do things. You can always see the straight file system the user land from a master jail. But again, watch your paths, watch your soft links. On a previous DBOX, can anybody tell me real quick, I don't know, maybe there'll be some bonus prize to find one. This microphone, you can have it. If anybody can tell me what slash home is on a FreeBSD system. Does anybody know what slash home is? Spitzer.
A matter of opinion.
What is slash home? What is slash home? Slash home is a syslink, it's symlink to user home. Right? So, yes, yeah, it depends on your choices, it depends on your user land. Man hire is what you want to read to look at how it works on FreeBSD. If you want to argue it, don't talk to me, I don't care. Go stop. But that's a good example of little gotchas, all right? Because if you CD into path to your jail directory slash home, that's a soft link slash home, that just shots you to the root of your host system's home. Alright? You go in there, you untar something, and overwrite a bunch of files. You totally screw yourself up. Another reason not to really treat your host system as anything but a jailing box. It's a really bad idea to run services and do things from your host system. Alright? Now this is where I get into just practical stuff and start talking. I'm going to just start going in directions that you guys can shout and start taking me. But you really don't want to do anything in your host box. Really treat the jails like they are the machines that you're using on that box. Because if you do, you create problems that then affect all of your other jails. Your host box is sacred, totally sacred. You gotta treat it like it is what it is.
So what if you
want to
restart a jail? What's that five-gate kill?
Okay, well, yeah. That's on the next page. Hold on just a sec, you'll get that. Design your jailing system carefully. I'm not gonna give a cons note about read-only mounts. I will mention UnionFS real quickly to answer this gentleman's question. UnionFS, for those who aren't familiar with it, is really cool. You can take a base file system, you can mount it somewhere else in the file system, and any changes you make to that somewhere else get overwritten as metadata that exists elsewhere. So every time you mount back to that UnionFS, you have this abstract thing that actually says, well, yes, I edited this file, so then it's to a file or actually just metadata that the actual real file still exists elsewhere. And when you delete a file, it leaves a little inode behind that says, well, this file still really exists, but it's deleted. So UnionFS is cool because you can save a lot of space. Suddenly, then all the changes that happen in jail user land only become the files that change. You can use the same user land over and over and over again. Big problem. UnionFS is bloody broken. It is so unstable, it makes you want to cry. That's my answer, sadly, for you, sir. UnionFS, I think the man page even states UnionFS needs a parent. It's like a little puppy dog. So if somebody wants a puppy, you want a development project, UnionFS, please. Mark. What about just using NFS mounts? Possible. That gets into a pretty wicked discussion about NFS, whether you're into that in big environments or not. Let me throw out, that's a good question because it brings up the idea of big environment. When you start jailing, you run a lot of jails on contemporary hardware, and nothing really hurts. Everything runs really fast and smoothly.
A lot.
100 jails. How about that? A dual 300 megahertz Xeon machine running 100 jails, running web application servers, will scream. The jails will scream. When you get into larger environments, you start doing things like NFS mounts. You start getting into all of the wicked problems that happen when you have big NFS networks. You start getting into weird file locking problems. If you're a real guru with NFS, you love NFS, and you trust NFS, Go for it. Do it. Mount NFS all over the place. I'm not. It's hit me. So I don't. I prefer not to do that. Yes. For read only. I would actually use GeoGate instead. GeoGate is fresh to, I guess, previous D5.4. GeoGate allows you to map a raw disk device to a network interface. So you can take some, you know, 4-port gigabit Ethernet cards, some cross cables, and start mirroring disks over machines. You can also just throw raw disks out over a network and run clients on the other machines to mount them. There's no encryption layer for GeoGate at this point. So most applications and most people are running it really with crossover cables to mirror drive. But you could very easily use that as a pretty efficient way to do read-only. And things like ports, CDs. Yeah, another question in the back.
Man jailgate, no manual entry for jailgate.
GGATED. It's cool stuff. All the emerging Geom stuff, by the way, is really, really fantastic. There needs to be some kind of, just like ports tracker stuff, there needs to be like a Geom tracker. There's just a lot of really great Geom stuff that's been around actually now for over a year, 2 years, that nobody knows about because the man pages don't know about each other. Yes? Any pleasant way to manage ports in jails? Yeah. Copying them. First pleasant way. Since you're on a host machine, you can start thinking, and this is, I'm going to go a couple different ways with that question. There's some neat ways to manage ports in jails because, hey, if you've got a whole bunch of machines and they're all sitting on the same piece of hardware, suddenly instead of copying them over a network, you're copying ports locally on a hard drive. And it doesn't take that long and it's not that painful. We've got big hard drives and a lot of space, and that's real cheap nowadays. This isn't rocket science. Another way to do this would be using UniFS. Another way to do this, NullFS. NullFS is officially broken as well for about a year and a half. But NullFS is a very similar way of mounting read-only mounts and computer places in the file system. That's about all I can think of. You could use GeoGate locally. That'd be a pretty cool way to go. And I don't know if anybody's written any Geom stuff that actually works like that, but you could have started GeoGate daemon that's serving a particular part of your file system, and then just mount it via localhost wherever you want over and over and over again. And I say that's actually a cool idea because the Geom stuff, GeoGate, it's real stable. Really, really, really stable and really fast. So that's worthwhile. Okay, we've already covered all this stuff. Okay, so real quick, does anybody have any questions about the kind of stuff we were just talking about? Disks, where to put stuff? Yeah. Actually, I'm going to run through because memory's fun. Great utilities in 4.x, JPS, JKill, and JTOP. They're all in ports. Man, they're handy. They're really, really, really handy. Jail processes have a little flag, so when you run top, you get like a little weird flag. But again, on a jailed box, there's not displays big enough to show you all the running processes to find all your jails. Really painful. JTOP is really neat because it's just like top, but it organizes things and gives the jails hosting. Let's see, JKill is what it is. It's kill, but you use it to kill a jail's master process that kills everything in the jail. And JPS, which just lists, it's PS, but lists all of your jails next to it. 5.x, JPS, JKill, and JTOP are retired. They're written in Perl, by the way, and they work great. They're a little wonky. In 5.x, you have built-in PS and kill. Plus JLS, or excuse me, kill, you can throw a dash J flag at, and it will kill everything in the jail's process tree, an entire jail. Plus, you have JLS, which lists all of your jails and gives the jail number, which is really neat, really big improvement. It's just an integer that just starts counting how many jails you've got. JAttach. JAttach lets you take a process, attach it to a jail's process tree. So, if you want to take and execute a shell from the master host server inside of the jail environment, you want all your variables. This is a common use for JAttach. You want to do something in a jail, you're on the master, you're logged into the master box. You can call JAttach, call your shell, and it'll call the local shell from your machine inside of the jail's process tree, and suddenly you're jailed, and all you do is exit out of it. Does that all make sense? And then there's a bunch of syscontrol features for jailing, which are really well documented in the jailman page again. Which I'll get to some more. I'm not going to get into that. I'm going to get into more interesting stuff. That's, yeah, question. Processes running in a jail are just processes. No, there's nothing special about them. They're just processes on the system, but they're processes that have been seeded. And if you're interested in the mechanics of how how things get jailed and how to break through them, CH Route 2, this actual syscall for CH Route is the best place to look at that, because it explains exactly how it works and how you can break it, crack it. Let me see. So you want to design carefully. Yeah, that was on the last page. Common weak points. Lost jail? You can lose jails. You want to lock down the host names on jails, which on previously 5.6 is suddenly a jail syscontrol tunable. If you don't lock down the host name on jail and you use a utility like JTOP, and suddenly you see the jailed machine with a host name that you've never seen before suddenly taking up all this weird process. It's taking up all your CPU. Super hard. Or suddenly you're trying to kill a jail that you know is being problematic and you can't find its host name. Somebody's changed the host name in the jail. Again, on massively jailed systems, this kind of starts merging network topologies and your system topologies in weird ways. So suddenly you want to do things like lock down your host name. So when you're in the host system, you know you're killing the right jail. It's a real cute trick for somebody to have two jails in the same box, switch their host names, and then somewhere down the road somebody kills one of those jails and they kill the wrong one. That's a fun trick. It's hard to find who did that weeks later. Let's see. Resource-based attacks. This is big stuff. Disks being full. Quotas and slices. Slices are probably the most sane way to deal with things practically in BSD4. Slices work. I mean, actual physical disk partitions work. Think about it this way. You have a jailed system and everybody's using the same user local and the same slice, on the same host machine, they're using the same slice. All your jails are there. Some of these jailed logs files just start ballooning. What happens? Disk full. Whole box comes down. All the jails come down. All right. So resource-based attacks are real easy ones. They're easy to avoid. Partitioning quotas gets a little complicated and stupid. Just in practice. File-based disk images. Which is that in here? No, it's really not. That's something I'm going to do anew. File-backed disks is what they're called in 3DST Canva. On Apple stuff, they're always just called disk images, and they're cool. It's a file you mount it, and it turns into a disk with a fixed size. File-backed disks are awesome for jailing because they're way more flexible than partitions. You don't know if you may need to grow a jail. You don't know how many jails will exist on a box. So physically partitioning your drives is a pretty rigid way to go about locking down file size. Whereas file-backed disks are really flexible. You can just copy files back and forth and make them larger and smaller. Yeah. An upper limit on file-backed disks? That's a really good question. Can you post that? Are you on the talk list? Okay, can you post that to talk, and then I'll try and look it up and answer it. The question was, are there any upper space limits, like Linux what? Linux loopback file systems. All right. That's up to you. Find out. Okay. Big one. Still not addressed, and this is a huge problem in computing all together, all over the place. Fork bombs and memory hogs. There's a really cool, I get the URL in here, there's a really cool way to lock down your system to try and help protect you against fork bombs and memory hogs. How many people know kind of what I'm talking about with these? Like, explain it real quick. A couple people do. Okay. Fork bombs, memory hogs. I'll give you a quick story. A friend of mine, Brian, Lower East Side, Matthew Mix Users Group. Brian wrote a little program about 20 years ago called Hog. Hog, you throw an integer at it, and it hogs that integer's amount, a number of megabytes of memory. So if you run Hog 100, that process will just sit and hog 100 megabytes of memory. All right? So, neato, cool. We can start locking down our memory and how much memory we use, all this stuff. What if you run while one do hog 100 with a bash shell? Hey, you just start forking off all these processes that are all going to try to hog 100 megabytes of memory, and suddenly your swap disks are burning hot, and you can't touch the computer anymore. Did this for BSD4, tested this extensively, and had a lot of fun with it, and amazingly, FreeBSD4, it was such a wonderful, wonderful release because the boxes never crashed. They acted like it, and it took about 20 minutes with a head plugged into the box to get a character in the shell to show up. But when we ran these fork bombs, the machines never came down. Beautiful. That's aside, though. With all that stated, these things are real problems because suddenly you get into situations in jails where you want to restrict this. How can you do that? Well, you can use login.conf and raise secure levels. Right? So you can restrict the number of processes by editing login.conf inside the jail. All right, and then inside the jail's root, well, they can edit that file. So you need to lock that down. You need to give it an immutable flag. And you need to then reboot the box and run a higher secure level, so that your immutable files, nobody can change them, ever. This is really inflexible, it's not fun, but it is the way to mitigate the risk of fork bombs.
Is there some way to limit resource utilization on a jail-by-jail basis rather than an individual process basis in the jail?
Yes, Robert Watson and PHK are working on this issue, but it's for process. It goes beyond some of the work that they've done with process auditing and gets into actual process, real-time process controls. So think conceptually of running PS with processes. The packet filter. That's the kind of tool that Robert Watson and PHK have been working on. It's slow coming. It's complicated. I guess my answer to that question is people are really, really thinking about that one, but it's not there yet. I would love to know anybody on any of the Unix, any non-Unix system has ever seen any really successful long-term solutions to some of these problems. Because with all my digging and research, there's a lot of really neat problems that jails bring up when you start virtualizing them that are really complicated. And we're going to get to memory in just a second. Let me see. Process control. Okay, so we just talked about process control a bit. Direct driver access flags. This is a common weak point. Flags to mount your DemFS, your PROCFS. And if you're running a bunch of web servers, you really do want to pay attention to this. All right? Because if somebody compromises a jail, it can be a very trivial problem if they don't know what all the other jails are in the box, if they don't know the general layout of the box. They get a lot of information that's really useful to crack the host box or to make some extreme problems for you anyways. So you really want to pay attention to those. And most people just set up jails and don't pay attention to those things. We've had that page. Comments on isolationism. Okay, so this is that URL. I'll post it to talk. This is the URL for this kid. When he wrote the article, it was a number of years ago, like 2000 or something. He was 14, and he wrote this article on how to mitigate the fork bomb problem. He ran a thing called OpenRoot,
Stan Evans from Mitchell. He ran Open Root, and Open Root was a jail system that would address its, that would advertise its root password on a web page on the internet and allow you to log in as root and do whatever you wanted. And every hour on the hour, this system was re-imaged and became brand new again. So what a cool project. What ended up happening, this kid was a junior high student, and this was like a little Unix terrorist playground for a training playground for a bunch of junior high kids who, I want to eat at this point. So they would all just go in, destroy everything they possibly could, because they knew in an hour the box would be back up just like it was before, and they would have room again. Pretty neat. Fork bombs became the thorn in his side that he had to fix. Automation. I'll go through this fast because a lot of people here are sysadmins from when we raised our hands earlier. And basically, anything you do to manage a large network of Unix machines, you can do on a jailing box and across multiple jailing boxes, but you just don't have a network. You copy instead of use some other network box. So this all just gives insanity in how you run your network. Let's see. And tarball packaging is your friend, big time. There's a few gotchas with tarball packaging, like different types of flags, weird sticky bits and flags don't always translate in jails, so when you're copying between pieces of tarball jails between various hardwares, certain things like var, it's what comes up. Var has a certain sticky bit set, so suddenly nobody but super user can run DI. It's really annoying because it tries to write a simple box to var. So there's little gotchas like that that come up when using tar. So, but it's still really, for all intents and purposes, your best friend in the world. Because you can always tar a box, move it quickly, bring some service back up online, and rebuild the base source for your, that's the laziest way to do it, rebuild your source for your thing, and it's all at the same spot. You can also do this for upgrades. So say you're upgrading between a minor dot release on a previous people jailing system. But hey, you just start building a bunch of you can build one new jail source and just overlay the tarball on top of all of your jail all of your jail directories. Again, beware of symlinks. Beware of device process mouse in 4.x, so you don't copy those between machines and things like that. You get annoying. Previously ports. Okay, here's in automation. Use the previously ports mechanism. Yorama, I don't think he's here tonight. Is he here? No. He gave a cool lecture at Ice Club meeting a while ago on ports, and he made it look easy. So does anybody who does anything really well. He's good at it. It makes ports look fun and easy. Well, hey, you can roll your own ports-based automated jail mechanism where, you have your own jail ports and that's just what you do. People have asked on various Kubernetes lists, why doesn't somebody do this? And everybody's answer is, what, are you crazy? Okay, so basically, you're going to take your userland distro and the way you like everything set up and your user accounts even, or your backdoor user accounts or whatever else you want in there, and put these in the ports tree. So some of them are going to have a million different operating systems to virtualize sitting in the ports tree. Stupid, bad idea. So it's not going to show up in the real previously ports tree. But you can very easily write your own ports. Say you want to apply jails in a really big environment. You've got hundreds of physical boxes and thousands of jails. Anyway, it really makes sense to actually start writing ports. Here's the turnkey stuff with Linux binary compatibility for this type of jail package that we use all the time. Bang! You just use ports and install it. This Java package, because it took a lot of time to tweak out Java exactly how we'd like to run in the jail. Bang! Here's our Java ported jail. That makes cool sense. And I won't suggest which port system to use. I mean, it's only port attention. Mark, yeah. Yeah, you can use a binary package. Yeah. Just like the tarballs. Just like rolling out a tarball of pre-compiled binary.
I don't know if you heard the question, just whether or not you could, you had to go from source, you could use binary. And it's CBS and Subversion. These become really cool ways of doing things. Say you have, you know, constantly evolving jail base. Hey, stick the entire FreeBSD source tree into CBS or Subversion for yourself, for your company. Here's the standard users that we've got every time you roll a new jail out. Here's the, you know, the X number of things we have installed or don't have installed. Why not? Then, you know, instead of building a new source tree, it's just a CBS checkout. Neat way to do things. Okay. Somebody had asked one, they'd asked a bunch of times about running, we want our firewalls in jail. You want to filter packets at the jail level. You don't really have direct access to your IP interfaces, and it's kind of outside the range of realm of sanity. Think of your host box like and this is totally an arguable point, and there's all kinds of neat things to be said about it. There's all kinds of neat things to be said about it, because this is a real arguable point, but you can think of your host box as a perimeter on your network. But instead of going across the network cable, it's running across your motherboard. So think of you know, firewalling mechanisms on your host machine to deal with your jails. The PF man cave will freak you out. Give you years and years and years of fun. Let me see. Oh yeah, and then these threats, any threat that you want, most of the different threat models that you apply to why you want to be filtering packets or firewalling, would affect the entire host server, right? So it doesn't really make sense to do all this stuff on a per jail basis. Okay, so that's basically that stated. Okay, so fun, feature directions and fun. This is what I want for Christmas. Feature directions. Okay, I'm just going to leave it on this slide. CARP, PF and OpenBSD. Neat stuff. A lot of possibilities for jumping deals. How many people know what CARP is? PF's in. Okay. CARP is in FreeBSD. PF is in FreeBSD. In the base. Now, thanks to Max Layer, who's a really crazy German. Really, really crazy guy. Really nice guy. Everybody needs to buy him a lot of beer all the time. Not because he put PF into FreeBSD, but because it's really funny. He's awesome. Let's see. Geom. This geometry stuff we were talking about before. Ways of mirroring disks across the network. We have it now. Gate. Or ways to mirror disks in really cheap and effective ways across cheap hardware, I should say. NFS improvements. Everybody's been talking about that since the 80s. So it's not going anywhere as far as I'm concerned. And more types, like all of these needs need better documented and more mass SAN type stuff. We need clearer documentation on how to do stuff. FreeBSD in particular needs better big disk support. Anybody in the room ever trying to set up a disk with over 2 terabytes, a single logical volume on FreeBSD? Oh, so somebody could help me. It's not fun. It's really, really painful. There's a lot of gotchas. There's a lot of little problems. So start getting into these bigger jail systems. Start running into these problems, because you want to start doing things to make these things fail over. Zero-conf rendezvous and DNS for SSH, well, that's just something I've had in these forever, because zero-conf will make any big network with lots of IPs a lot easier. If you could just SSH to hostname.local all the time and know where you're going, it'd be great. Apple, we're in the Apple store. Apple's done a lot of neat stuff to promote zero-conf rendezvous, put source code out there, and all this stuff. They've done everything but make something that's usable or useful on any other Unix besides Darwin. So I'm coughing, hoping that, you know, there's no Darwin people here, there's no big Apple people here who make those kinds of decisions. But, man, come on. It would be so pleasant if somebody would just make it work like it does on their own page. Okay, let me see. Now we're, what are future directions? 3, 4, 5, and 6 is where we're at. Okay, so questions, and let's talk about some high availability kind of stuff here. Questions you guys have about running velocities. Mr. Mann. Yes, I am indeed. Yes. Next question. Which question?
Well, any of them.
Oh, he was asking if I was wearing a tie. I didn't think it was worth repeating. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Great. Yes. Thank you. The question is, we all use things besides FreeBSD. What about Linux, Solaris? You know what you're talking about.
Okay.
You know what some of these things do. Xen, X-E-N, machine virtualization, the hottest, latest, greatest machine virtualization system. We're going to have a meeting on it pretty soon. How can I put it? Xen runs on Linux. Xen runs on NetBSD. Xen will run NetBSD at this point. It's support one of the supported operating systems. And it's a full machine virtualization system. Very different from Galen. You have virtual memory, virtualized memory container. You have virtualized disk from the get-go. You have all these things that are virtualized. You have virtualized network interfaces. You really do have something that's nearly a full hardware environment that's presented to your software running on it, which would be an operating system. Big difference here. It's an apple and oranges kind of comparison when you talk about jails and Xen, because jails are designed from the ground up to be secure. Secure means trade-offs. Secure in the context which I've presented them means certain types of trade-offs. You don't want deep processes and people to easily be able to jump outside of the jail. Well, one really good way to mitigate these problems is to start with really secure and automated code base and to work on top of big things. I don't know how many developers are working on Xen. IBM's involved with Xen, so they're probably throwing, 70 really brilliant people at Xen directly. At the deepest level. There's a lot of people in open source working on it, but we're talking in the hundreds of people who actually touched the Xen code base, right? That's really great. When it comes to running a secure operating system, it's my feeling, my personal opinion, this is all debatable in a lot of contexts, but to run a secure operating system, you need a lot more hands and eyes and people breaking stuff, people hacking stuff, people exposing it to different types of vulnerabilities. So most of the Xen installations are dev servers inside of corporate lands. They're heavily protected. You're not going to find a lot of problems. The last big thing I saw that was cool about jailing is that it was used for DEF CON's capture of the flag last summer. That's neat, all right? That says a lot. You got some of the best hackers in the world at the championship of a year-long capture the flag competition, sitting in a room, all of them on one computer, all separated by jails, right? Jails are really tight, really, really, really tight. So with all of that stated, I believe personally that applying jails to some kind of public internet context, particularly web hosting contexts, web application servers, and other types of environments where you have a lot of mutually entrusted users, including the world and their packets flying at the jails. I trust the jail. I don't trust a Xen instance, period. There's not enough people. There's not enough. There's not enough resources to actually secure it. And that's not really their aim. Their aim is a virtualization, and it's been this way. This has been a debate for like maybe 30 years in computing, how to virtualize things, how to actually virtualize things. People get really excited about all the neat things you can do with actually virtualizing memory, virtualizing the way that you talk to disks and all this stuff, because it's real abstract. Well, the more complexity you add into a system, the more vulnerable it is, and the more it breaks, So, jail's good when you want a secure environment. Xen's good when you want to work through it. Yeah?
I mean, we talked, I guess it came up 9 months ago on the talk list. I can talk about this. It's apples and oranges. Xen versus jails are two different things. I mean, completely, when it comes down to it. Jails can play whole numbers of functions for you as a sysadmin, individual sysadmin on your own jail, or you can have it so that, you know, you throw in your system in, here's your IP, here's your jail, and play. You know, and so apples and oranges. But I wanted to address, just even the question of vulnerabilities and so on. I think a lot of people in this room are very, very excited on the question of Zen. You know, and we've had a number of discussions.
Who's the Zen author again? The speaker who's going to talk.
Johnny Lamb.
Is he in the room?
No.
All right. If Johnny Lamb hears this or talks about this, like, I want to know, Ike wants to know how Zen addresses these issues. I want to know how the Zen development process can match the FreeBSD Unix or any BSD development process in terms of building a secure system.
If Zen's being developed cross-platform as far as a cross-platform virtualized thing can go, in a way FreeBSD jails weren't having that. So you're right when it comes to the...
So what would you like to put your business data on? A machine running FreeBSD jails or a Red Hat box running NetBSD in a Zen container?
Very happy with jails. But I wanted to take a little bit of a break here, because one of the ways you're talking about jails in production that you made, I think, a slight reference to that came up on BSD CAN list 6 months ago was Paul Henning Camp, who was one of the developers of jails along with Robert Watson, was talking about an instance where he was running a jail for a high-profile website that everybody knows, and he couldn't tell us what it was, that was running a checksum on the jail every 30 seconds. And every time there was a change in the checksum, the jail overrode itself from the master. So I think that's not the most purely Unix solution to a problem, right, in the world. So, you know, super hacker 14-year-old, but the guy who did the four box, comes out, boom, ha, 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 boom. All of a sudden the jail rewrites itself. I mean, I think that there's a creativity. I haven't actually implemented, jail's running on 4X and 5X. I haven't actually implemented anything like that yet. I don't have that problem. but anyway, there's a lot of creativity.
Everybody hear that? SDBI.net.
Thanks. I kind of like security by obscurity sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. One machine, one process, 1 gig of RAM. Theoretically, to handle like running Apache 1,000 hits per second. Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yes, there's a significant performance advantage, and this gets into other virtualization systems. Then just keep picking on Zen. Coming up. There's a significant performance advantage running jails as a virtualized system because the overhead to run jails is that of CHP. Nearly nothing. Next to nothing. All right. So on a machine like what you just spoke of that many processes, that what is it, gigahertz machine, gig of memory, you're going to have you're not going to notice the overhead of jailing into the system. The only thing that really starts soaking your processes, your memory and processor when jailing are the processes that you run inside the jail. It's so lightweight, it's ridiculous. That's a big difference between jailing and Zen. Zen, because you're virtualizing things like memory, you're virtualizing network interfaces and giving these abstract hardware virtualizations to the machine. That's a lot of CPU out there, a lot. Managing memory in an effective and efficient way, partitioning memory in an effective and efficient way, that consumes a lot of resources. Did that answer your question, Walt? Okay. I got it. Why aren't more operating systems copying the jail? I can answer the OpenBSD question because I had the pleasure. Everybody goes to Canada, BSD can. International stuff's great. I had the pleasure of asking Matt MSF. What's Matt's last name? Well, the core OpenBSD developers, Matt. And then another, who else was there? Henning Brower. I got to ask Henning, and I got to ask Bob Beck. All right, so all these guys, I got to actually hit rail on because I was speaking on jails. They're like, okay, guys, jailing. And Henning's answer becomes application-specific kind of methodology kind of issue. Henning's answer was, it's stupid. Why would you virtualize? If you virtualize, if you run stupid software on a computer, if you jail it, that doesn't make the software any less stupid. Okay, okay, that's a fine answer. And he is right. If you run a really bad piece of software and it's going to be bad, it's going to be bad for the whole system. If there's a system, if there's an exploit or a vulnerability for some core system process, or something that's part of FreeBSD base, it affects every jail, it affects the whole system, it affects everything. So it doesn't protect against that risk model, which Henning seems to care about a lot. Bob's answer was basically, could have been doing other stuff, thinking about other things, like all the RAID work that they just did and some other things. So that's a time issue. And a third one is that, how can I put it? Because jail works at such a low level, you have to go through, and because it relies on the rest of the operating system to be clean and be built really sanely so the processes don't infect each other from jail to jail, you have to audit all the sources of the operating system, which PHK and Larry Watson pretty much single-handedly, pretty much, have done, right, in the context of jailing. And I've gone over it a couple times now, because now we're up to FreeBSD 6, and every time they do it, they audit again, and they find more stuff, and they include it as things that you can use in jails. Like in FreeBSD 5, you can suddenly do new things with IP interfaces. FreeBSD 7 will perhaps be able to assign multiple IP interfaces to jails, fingers crossed. In that, IPv6 addresses to jails directly. Whereas right now, you have to map an IPv6 address to a jail address. Come on, just a second. So, to answer your question, why hasn't it been done on Linux? Well, because the real fundamental strength of how the jails work is that the rest of the operating system is so tight and clean. That can't be said of a lot of components in Linux. I'm not trying to start flame wars. I'm not trying to start problems. But yeah, things have to be well written so that they don't create conflicts when you put them in container. That's basically it. So the Zen model actually does work better on Linux. Like the Zen model of virtualizing hardware interfaces, really making, like, Zen has very little to do with the core operating system that's running. It's really a piece of software that's very separate, right? And it talks then through abstract layers to the core operating system that says, hey, I've made an abstract IP interface. I'm going to hand this to the real IP interface and talk to it. Well, in the jail, you're actually talking to the real IP interface at a very low level. That's just not feasible for us. And it's the direction they've chosen to not address. And I hope that answers your question, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. I would love to see it on OpenBSD. I think a lot of people would. This is some really compelling reasons to apply in this various projects that for me would involve jailing as well. So I'd like to see it there. I'd like to see it in net. I think it would be trivial after talking with Roland, NetBSD, the NetBSD board. He was talking about chroot. We had a good conversation about this about 2 years ago when I first started. And he was like, oh, wow, that'd be really easy to implement. It would just be really tedious. I said, yeah. You want to do it? He said, that'd be tedious. And that's all I've known about it. And that'd be easy to manage, too. So it just takes some impetus. Everybody start whining to your favorite Unix, open source Unix, saying, hey, it's just that's really cool. FreeBSD, it's really neat. Get some developer who's like, yeah, that's cool. Or write it. Don't throw stuff if you say stuff like that. Yes? Okay, can you repeat that question again? Oh, our process IDs 32-bit or 64-bit in a jailed container. Traditionally, they're 16-bit. Yeah, I don't know. I have that one on the list, and I will look it up. even if you have to look it up in the source code.
What's the practical application of that question?
What's the practical application of that question, Mark?
If you have Zig Mark, you have 200 jails.
The Zig Mark, you have 200 jails. And each of them is running 500 processes.
You now have a million.
You now have a million.
You have more than 64K.
You now have more than 64K of process IDs. Yes. Okay, Mark, you're going to be in charge, because here's the next thing I was going to say. I started that thing for BSD CAM last year, which went nowhere. Partially my responsibility, because I didn't push it. Partially everybody got involved with it, because nobody kind of knew what to do. But I got the domain name jailing.net and put a kind of a bloggy, kind of weird groupware app up online for everybody, which everybody logged into after the conference. You got like 40 people who were like, yeah, that's awesome. And then like everybody's like, okay, what do we do? So I just took the site down. Just because it's been almost a year and nothing's happened. What does everybody want to do with it? Bring it up on Nice Book Talk. What do people want to do with it? Is it worth doing anything with it? And secondly, let's have some jailing parties. Done this before. It's really fun. You get a bunch of people on IRC, on the Nice Book channel.
Yeah.
You get them on a box that I can get online somewhere. You get them, and you get everybody loot on this host box. Everybody builds jails, destroy them. And we do nasty things like, Mark, you're going to get to try setting up as fast as you can, as many jails as you can, running as many processes as you can, and break the system. So sometime, let's bring it up on Talk, but sometime let's do one of these jailing parties, because a lot can be learned.
Kid fork.
Well, here's another issue. Okay, there's a little side discussion over here about random process IDs over here. A lecture that Ryan applied to OpenBSD gave in Canada. Random process IDs, right? So when you log into a jail, and say you're somebody who's an attacker, you just log into a jail, you type PS, and you're in, and you're hot. And suddenly you don't have an init process. You don't have process zero, you don't have, and your processes start at like, 80. And you're like, okay, this is really weird. I'm in something weird, this isn't right. You know, and you're just like, in the Matrix, we see the cat, but twice, and it's like, whoa, I'm not, this isn't real, this isn't a real Unix machine. And they run away screaming, and you don't need to catch them, you do anything fun. Random process IDs. Gee, we have random process IDs on 3DSD. And just about everything, if we had more randomization of these things, we would have issues like that. You'd have, log in, your first process would be 820, and that'd be a hit, and just nod and move on, and it would look normal, feel normal. And the risk also beyond just people cracking and getting weird information out of your system that's esoteric as all get out, is that, you may have programs or things written that actually look and do things with process ID numbers and badly written software. And that's part of what's useful about jails, is that you want to put badly written software in a container if you have to run it. Right? And anybody who does this stuff for a living has to touch a lot of badly written software. With all that stated, what other questions do people have? Yeah. High availability thing. Okay.
I'm assuming you're talking about on the application level, not on the IT level.
Well, here's the deal. Where is it? CARB. I have not had time yet to explore this because I've been moving too many things and doing too much this fall. But using CARB, hey, sir. Using CARB would be an awesome way to actually take jails and do high availability things at an IP level with jails. Another thing is GeomGate. And another thing that I think is really promising is using GeomGate to mirror the actual data across pieces of hardware. So suddenly you have, and I'll give an example real quick of where I would have loved to have this happen. I had a motherboard die through really bad timing this week in moving data centers. So I'm already doing all this server jockeying, and I've got these jails up while I'm shuffling these boxes down, and
blah, 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 blah. Not a lot of fun. And as far as I'm doing this, I did have a motherboard die. I had to bring up a bunch of jails and grab the backups of the systems from the night before and untar all of them. And the process took about 10 minutes, and all those systems were back online. They're just really bad timing. Systems are being just piled their stuff already downtown and gone. Just bad timing, really annoyed me. But instead of having to untar things, like, I kind of think about it, I'm like, wow, it worked. It's great. All this jailing stuff, I really had great luck with hardware over the years. I, you know, I phase it up because it's too slow mostly, or getting new stuff for particular clients. And now suddenly I actually had something die in my hands, and I popped these jails back up within minutes, and it's great. That's pretty cool. It's still not really, doesn't meet a lot of high availability requirements. I'd love to have these jails, all of a sudden they die on one box, they are immediately reinitialized on another box. That kind of stuff can be done with GeoGate, right? And it can be done today. More testing and more fun needs to be, more recipes for how to do this needs to be out in the world. I'm trying to make more of them myself. But mirroring drives across hardwares is a really important thing. And then using hooks in CARP. CARP is ripped off the written. The CARP component. Yeah. So using hooks in CARP, how many people are familiar with CARP again? Number of hands. It takes multiple mix of multiple, across multiple computers with the same computer, and you can make a virtual hardware NIC that you can assign an IP address to for payload. It's really neat. So it's loose MAC addresses even. So switches and routers, when one machine dies, they still think they're talking to the same physical machine. Really, really creepy stuff. Really nice. So if you have that kind of IP-based failover, and you can match that with userland actual, your actual file failover, it's a hop, skip, and a jump to bring the process back up and start, you know, box A dies, but you don't just immediately include some box B, and half a second later it's accepting requests and whatever it was doing before. That's the direction I'm personally going with this stuff. Do I have anything solid to say about it yet? No. A lot of problems with a lot of the recipes and components and how to do things still, because it's all pretty new. But a lot of it independently is all pretty stable. Carp's been around for 2 years. GM stuff's been around for, I don't know how long. But now everybody's quiet. Everybody's feeding. Let's get out of here. So, did any, not any more last questions that you can't just come up and ask me afterwards? That concludes this nice bug meeting. Happy holidays, everybody. Thanks for listening and sitting with me. And let's get talkless and let's do a jailing party. Let's break some stuff. How about it? Oh yeah. Special thanks. John Brainiac Kalining, who taught me jail like long ago. This is, if you see either one of these faces ever, you probably won't ever see PHP anymore in politics.
Nobody wants to come
in. He's in the Netherlands, Ro Watson's in England. Buy these guys beer. They really deserve it. They love jailing a lot of other unique insanely cool things. That's it. And thanks to NicePub for having us here, and thanks to the Lower East Side Mac and Cheese Group, which, you know, without them I wouldn't be standing here.
None of us would actually be here.
None of us would actually be here, but that's a long story. Yeah. And that's it. Thanks, everybody. You want to say anything?
Yeah.
Quick. Again, thanks, Ive. Just as a reminder, we're going to Bruce Street Falls. Finally, if anybody knows, I did bring the card finally. It's